So you can push star 6 to mute yourself. And star 6, you push again to unmute yourself. It sounds like, so we'll start there. For those of you who don't know, I'm, of course, Brenda Blessings. This is Sunday, March 20th, and our topic today is intimacy is our natural state. So let's just settle in here. Everyone just kind of take a few deep breaths. Really feel the breath going through your body. Just be aware of how you feel. If you're feeling anxious or excited or curious or none of the above, sleepy, just let yourself be that and come into the space. Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take you through a little bit, and then I will stop and pause at various points to check in, and so we'll see where we go with this. Most stories about a spiritual journey ends with the hero or heroine in the story discovering something that was in him or her all along. Our spiritual education is like that. While we discover new things all the time, the deepest things we learn happen when we uncover what was already there. This is certainly true about the journey of intimacy, which is the topic of our discussion today. From a non-dual perspective, we are both made for and called into ongoing intimacy and relationship with all of life. Life, with a capital L, as I'm using the word today, is the word I've chosen to indicate the largest whole that contains everything else, all beings, and no thing without exclusion. This whole is mysterious and sacred. It is a source and a force, dynamic and continually changing and creating complexity and diversity. Our bodies, hearts, minds are made to know life intimately and in relationship. As David Abrams says in his book, The Spell of the Sensuous, humans are tuned for relationship. The eyes, the skin, the tongue, the ears, the nostrils, all are gates where our body receives the nourishment of otherness. This landscape of shadowed voices, these feathered bodies and antlers and tumbling streams, these breathing shapes are our family. The beings with whom we are engaged, with whom we struggle and suffer and celebrate. Much of our human journey is played out between the tension of longing and yearning of intimate relationship and our difficulties and challenges in actually being intimate. We often find ourselves swinging between actively seeking it out, distancing or cutting off from intimacy. We numb our senses and tune out the very relationship and intimacy's lifeblood that we so need. Although we all go to special places and do special things to put ourselves in the right mood or attitude to experience intimacy and relationship, the truth is intimacy does not reside in any one place to the exclusion of others. Instead, since life is wise and very, very kind, intimacy is available to us in each and every moment that we can bear being present to and in relationship with life as it's appearing right now. Every utterance, every moment of confusion, anger, every kiss and touch, no exception, is really a moment filled with the intimacy of singular beings in relationship. To deepen our work together today, I would like to outline what I am calling different stages of the journey of intimacy or different gateways into intimacy and relationship. You'll hear me using both of these words, stage and gateway. The stages apply to all relationships, whether another human being, a project, an organization, the earth, life itself. From the standpoint of a stage, it's important to note that we do not move through these stages in just a linear way only. We also spiral through them organically and dynamically again and again. As gateways, they're present and available in each and every moment. So there are four stages or gateways I'd like to outline here. Allow yourself to notice what arises in you as I name these stages, along with their qualities and conditions, including their wisdom and limitations. Try to notice without judging what appears. Notice how you feel in your body, what sensations, thoughts, and feelings arise for you. So let's call the first stage or gateway desire. Desire. The qualities or conditions of this stage are: this gateway opens up to us as an intense desire to connect. It pulls us forward into relationship and into inquiry with life. We're both curious and interested and excited to discover another and ourselves in relationship. Our bodies practically tremble with aliveness and all the possibilities. This stage is often called Eros, or you could say that it's viewed as enthusiasm with a capital E exclamation point. There's great delight in newness of this connection. This stage has a certain high to it. We're usually extremely optimistic and open and grateful for the connection and the growing joy. We feel like anything is possible. In many ways, this is a highly sexualized stage of relationship. This is not just true for sexual partners, but for any new relationship, because it has a certain kind of charge, a trembling of sex and orgasmic type of creativity and aliveness. We fall in love with this great spiritual teacher and think he or she is it. We fall in love with this great job or this great cause or another person, and it's got all of that in there. I finally found it. Not only is this new relationship enlivening, everything around us appears brighter and clearer. The hills are alive with singing. It's springtime, everything bursting forth with color and shape and sound. All of our senses are heightened. The wisdom or intelligence within this stage is that it does, in fact, call us forward into relationship. It calls us to leave states of isolation and separation and to enter more fully into life. It enlivens places in us that may have become stale or deadened. It wakes us up in some way to new possibilities and potentials within ourselves and life. When this gateway is held in relationship with the other gateways that we'll be discussing today, it also offers us the opportunity to see life fresh in each moment, to lift the veils of our histories and discover what is in front of us anew, again and again. It opens us up to the mysteries of relationship and life. It teaches us to inquire into life and to be moved and transformed through relationship with another or a whole bunch of others, depending on the relationships. The limitations of this stage that can often occur include, and these are important for you to feel for yourself places where this is true. This is a view of intimacy that is indeed so optimistic and hopeful that we often completely overlook or deny the difficulties and challenges that are present within us and within the other and in the relationship itself. We often only see sunshine or the light and deny the dark. It's why people will say statements like, he's blinded by love or lust, whichever the case may be. There's often very little discernment or discrimination. Usually the only form of discrimination is based on, do I feel good? Do I like it? Is it familiar? while avoiding as much as possible anything that's too uncomfortable or confusing, and so on. We unconsciously reduce the other, person, job, adventure, it doesn't matter, to an object. An object that is the source of great pleasure for us until they are not. We don't see the real person or job or teacher or project with their own longings, dreams, sorrows, and struggles. We only see our images of them. We can easily be seduced by this stage into believing it is the way all relationships should be. So when boredom or disappointment inevitably arise, rather than meeting or engaging with this disappointment, we jump as quickly as possible to another person, to another job, to another path, to another teacher. The high that happens in the body can become addictive or feed into our addictive tendencies to constantly seek out a high and a certain type of excitement. Become addicted to seeking out the risk and the energy involved in this type of exploration. We only feel alive through seeking out the thrill of constant newness and the exciting emotions that arise from this. Here we are always on the hunt, seeking and seeking, while simultaneously rejecting and avoiding. We don't see the destruction that we leave in our wake when we treat others as objects for our excitement and pleasure, and then leave them behind when they start becoming a real person with their own struggles and limitations. We don't see what it does to us, to ourselves, the ways that it actually leads to further deadening inside of ourselves, because we're so disappointed by it never working out, it never being what we expect. And we don't notice how it shuts down parts of ourselves and how we start creating certain conditions around what is possible, what is impossible, and what we expect in relationship. So I've said a lot. Before I move on, I just want you to feel each stage. I'd like you to stop, and we're going to stop, and I'll open it up and see if anyone wants to share. What thoughts and feelings and sensations arise for you? Are you aware of ways that you engage with desire or deaden and cut off from desire? How do you engage with new possibilities when they arise? Do you engage with them or move away from them? How do you feel about having this level of aliveness in your body? To feeling excitement, unknown, enthusiasm move through you? Are you aware of places that you are overly optimistic and only willing to see the good and only want to be happy and run away when things become too challenging? Are you aware of places where you're constantly questing after something else, something new to make you happy? It can appear in different places in life. It can appear in certainly loved ones and partnering. It can appear in jobs. It can appear, as I said, in teachers. It can appear in projects. It can appear anyway, anywhere. It may not appear in all places, and it may only appear in certain places. Are you aware of ways that you reduce others to an image where you want them to be good only, or your idea of good? See if you can just notice and be aware of these without adding additional judgment.
It's just Jerry. This is
Hello?
Jerry.
Okay.
I really relate to the thrill and the excitement of the new. Mm-hmm. And when the going gets rough, whether it's in a relationship, a marriage, and with life's trials and tribulations, I want to get going.
Uh-huh.
And I have difficulty staying with it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of difficulty.
Mm-hmm. It's important for you to know that, Jerry. It isn't about immediately changing that. It is about noticing that that is what you do, that there is a way in which it's become a habit for you to only want to feel certain feelings, you know, good feelings, that we can put it that way, and then want to leave when it becomes too difficult. Now,
uh-huh.
That doesn't mean that we don't also have to have discernment, and that will come in as I go along through these other stages. But it's very important for you to know that about yourself.
Thank you.
I mean, so thank you, sweetie. Anyone else want to share?
Brenda, this is Florence. Sometimes I wonder whether the desire expresses itself in the new relationship with something starts as in the places that are safe and avoid being open to intimacy in other types of relationships where I'm afraid of them. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I mean, in other words, you start projects or you start jobs or you start exploring with people or person as a way to distract you from what you really want or really might be looking for or might be open to. It closes you down to others, to other relationships. You know?
Right. Yeah. Sure. I think that's absolutely true. I mean, when we get into the next stage, we can see the relationship that happens. but absolutely, that's true. I mean, the thing about the... First of all, we have to understand that in our Western world, so to speak, the new and the shiny is what we're supposed to be interested in, according to every commercial, ad, magazine, you know, you name the list.
Yeah.
Everyone's all about the new and the shiny.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have this, just as we have a consumer attitude to a lot of, you know, like, you know, consume up objects and throw them away. And, you know, I mean, I'm talking about, you know, people are, you know, buy, and then throw it away and don't want it. And people do that with physical objects like that. And we do it with ourselves and people as well. We have this consumer new thing in which whatever is around the corner, you know, the whole idea of the grass being greener, you know, that's where we should be putting our attention upon, that is where all the good stuff is. So it really, there's a lot of influence. It's not just your own personal attitudes or personal histories that may come into play within this. It is very much part of our culture that says the next thing is the thing you should be paying attention to.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone uses it to distraction. I mean, you know, again, there are 1,000 messages out there that says if it's uncomfortable, you know, go run around the block and get some endorphins going. If it's uncomfortable, go buy the next beautiful purse, and it's all, you know, it's all much better. You know, go out and find the next adventure. Go on, you know, this great vacation, and then it's all new. So there's a lot of messages that are all about distracting ourselves from anything that feels like too much.
Mm-hmm.
So, you're right, Florence. I think the thing at this moment in talking about it today is to feel compassion for ourselves, both because we have been conditioned to do that, and it isn't just something we made up as a fantasy on our own. It's something that does exist in the wider culture. and to realize that it also had to do with, you know, as children, we were faced with things that were so impossible that we couldn't change, whatever they were in our family systems. So we would tell ourselves, you know, it'll be different when I'm, you know, when I'm a grown-up, I'll be able to do X, Y, Z. You know, when I'm a grown-up, I'll be able to go out and, you know, I'll eat what I want and I'll go, you know, play what I want. No one can stop me. So it has its roots in this original place when where things were too much. We were helpless and powerless, and we wanted to go someplace else that would be new and exciting and all good, and we wouldn't have to deal with people telling us no, and we wouldn't have the, you know, it's the fantasy of the child. We just don't realize that that fantasy is stayed frozen inside of us, that this beautiful, beautiful mechanism that saved our lives and was a defense against the too muchness of our childhood has now become a habitual defense, and it's frozen in place. So now we're 30 and 40 and 50 and 60 and 70, and we're still playing it out. So right now it's just noticing it with kindness, noticing that tendency and beginning to catch ourselves and notice it and begin to catch it and wonder how I could build another muscle. What would it be like to build a muscle that allowed me to stay with more longer? It allowed me to stay with myself. It's not about staying with the other, even. Stay with myself and the feelings that arise for me, which would lead us to the next stage. It's really noticing that and noticing that we're both running away from pain, but we're also creating pain by doing that. Mm-hmm. We're running away from the pain or the uncomfortable, but we're also creating pain. Because it sends us the message again and again that where we are is not okay. It sends us the message again and again that we have to do that, that we're still a little child who cannot bear any kind of discomfort, that we're still needing to do that to save our lives. And that may not be true. You know, it doesn't mean, we don't wipe out the senses. But to begin to soften that defense and question, do I really need to do that here and now, in this moment? Do I really need to run away? What is it that I actually feel? Let's try first not to run away from me. What's uncomfortable for me? What's coming up for me? So.
Yeah. Thank you.
So thank you, sweetie. Anyone else want to share before I go to the next stage? You push *6 to unmute yourself. So let's go to the next stage or gateway. Let's call this one individual power and beingness. Individual power and beingness. The qualities or conditions of this stage may be obvious, but that from this gateway, intimacy is based on a personal sense of power and beingness, claiming who we are, coming to know ourselves, what we like and dislike, along with what we need, while simultaneously engaging in relationship with another. Choice is a central theme here, such as choosing a particular relationship, choosing how to engage, and what to reveal and when, and all of the difficulties and confusions around choosing, around trust, and around being ourselves, the struggles in getting to know ourselves. Here, rather than simply running away from disappointments, we're offered the opportunity to meet them and find a sense of accomplishment in working through the challenges and struggles of intimacy and relationship. Here we wrestle with being able to be seen by another, met by another, honored and respected, while offering this to ourselves and to them as well. Wrestling is a fundamental hallmark of this gateway or stage. The wrestling is centered on being able to be ourselves and take in another. It includes having healthy boundaries. Here we wrestle with differences between ourselves and another, different rhythms, priorities, activities, likes and dislikes. We wrestle with dominance and surrender, controlling and collapsing, safety and vulnerability, imperfection and judgment, conflict and how to both bear conflict and work with it in a way that's healing and kind for us, learning to speak our truth and hear another's truth, even and especially when what is being said is difficult or challenging to our sense of self, knowing our needs and desires and knowing the difference between them. We meet issues with competition with others, our struggles to bear disappointments and hurt, and the ways we project our pain onto another. We wrestle with our personal histories and stories we tell ourselves about who we are and who the other is, and work to see through the illusions of our childhood dramas as they're still playing out today. In this gateway, we have a desire to feel a sense of power and engagement, feel good about ourselves. We have the challenge in this gateway of learning to become self-responsible for our own pain and happiness and overall well-being, to know what it means to take life-affirming action that does not kill off any part of ourselves. Our memories from the first gateway of desire and all the excitement and openness often help us meet what appears within this gateway. It can also act as a barrier within this gateway. We struggle to meet the one in us who's never satisfied, never quite happy, who doesn't trust, who's caught again and again in rejecting and seeking something else. Here, as we stay with this stage, we become more willing to meet our disappointments, confusions, competitions, and can feel the increasing joy of discovery and companionship in wrestling with who we are. The wisdom or intelligence within this stage is true intimacy includes two, or a multiplicity even within a group, who are different from each other and who are willing and open to discovery of themselves and the other. The wisdom of knowing we cannot have union or intimacy without being fully ourselves. It's the paradox of only a true human being can stand in the face of intimacy and neither disappear nor take up all of the room. We discover ourselves, our strengths, our weaknesses, our trustworthiness, and places we're not trustworthy. We're nourished by the challenges of being ourselves and being with another. We're blessed with the discoveries of our histories and seeing through the wisdom, seeing through the confusions and distortions. In this stage, it's all about learning to accept our imperfections and the imperfections of others. Here, we're working with developing more capacity to accept who we are as being good enough and precious while recognizing the work we have to do to come into relationship. we become more willing to take in the mysteries of ourselves and others. The limitations of this stage or gateway that often appear, we wind up withdrawing, either consciously or semi-consciously, from the relationship, hiding and defending, hardening in our defensive structures, unable to accept the gift and intelligence within the challenges of being in intimate relationship. So we self-objectify, making ourselves into an object only, while also projecting our images and ideas onto the other, making both of us not good enough, not being okay enough, and we freeze the relationship as well. We're unable to name and claim our vulnerabilities, our confusions, our imperfections, without feeling bad in an ongoing way or judging ourselves. We do the same with other people. We can't take in their vulnerabilities and their imperfections. We stay stuck in our histories and stories and use them to protect ourselves against the other. We stay stuck in blame, right versus wrong, judgment and rejection, and are unable to admit mistakes. We constantly assert our independence as a defense against feeling wrong or bad or invaded. Or we constantly collapse and surrender to the other, merging with them so as to avoid the challenges and difficulties of being different. We stay stuck in our preferences and semi-consciously kill off the things that are different and that feel too threatening. We don't take fundamental responsibility for our own happiness and pain and insist on projecting it onto the other, either directly, blaming them and making them bad, or through passive-aggressive actions and attitudes. Again, without adding additional judgment, I know it's hard when you start looking at this territory, but it's important to let ourselves notice what arose for you in hearing this. How do you engage with what it means to have individual power and to be yourself in relationship with another? What ways are you aware of that you defend against being wrong, making mistakes or revealing them, your imperfections or being vulnerable? What ways do you habitually judge and blame yourself or another? Are you aware of ongoing tensions within your relationships in which you don't feel safe in relationship? Are you aware of places in which you either dominate too much, trying to always be right, or surrender too much, continually making yourself bad or wrong? What's your relationship to shame? How much is your family history of relationships influencing or controlling your current day relationships? So once again, I'll pause. I'll open it up and see if anyone wants to comment about this stage. This is a stage where there's a lot of hard work in wrestling to know ourselves and in knowing ourselves in relationship with other people. It's where the defenses become much more present, and where it sometimes can feel like it's only hard work. It's not. It's also, there's a lot of sense of a different kind of aliveness than the aliveness of the first stage. It's the aliveness of coming through a difficult passage or revealing something to another that you thought you never could, and finding safety in the revelation, or pushing up against the places inside of us that say we're never going to be enough and that we're never going to be okay, and finding out that we are okay. It's the place of where we push up against where we give ourselves away to another because we're afraid of being abandoned or not being in the relationship. And we have to wrestle with, who am I? Do I matter and value to myself enough? It's a lot of hard work that goes into this stage, and yet it builds so many muscles and so much aliveness and freedom, because we have to work through so many frozen places. It's a very precious stage, and again, we go back to it again and again. And it's also, you know, it does in fact involve work. It's like sometimes it's like pushing the rock up the mountain, and sometimes it's rolling down the mountain, and sometimes it's feels like it's moving too fast, and sometimes it feels like it's really moving way too slow. There's a lot of different things that happen in this gateway. So, anyone like to share? Star 6.
This is Yvette.
Yes.
Listening to you speaking about this this stage, I became more and more anxious. And I felt like, you know, this is too much for me. Maybe I should hang up. It was coming to. There was something in me that felt overwhelmed. Partly because I'm coming out of a difficult situation for myself, but also seeing how this played out in many different types of relationship with others, and simply trying to be myself, you know, within this quote-unquote physical limitation. One thing I was going to ask you is, there may be something beneficial, I'm just making a statement here, in withdrawing, hiding, simply because it becomes too much?
I would agree with you. But I need to give a caveat to that, if that's okay. I agree with you that sometimes withdrawal is absolutely essential. Because this is the wrestling with being myself and being myself in relationship. And sometimes I have to pull back and just feel me and stay with me while, you know, temporarily disconnecting from the other so that I can go into myself and feel what's happening. So it's absolutely a beneficial thing to be able to withdraw. What we have to be awake to is the tendency to withdraw as habit or as out of our histories, out of it's too much and it's always going to be too much. It'll be too much forever, and I have to stay hidden forever. So we have to be awake to the places where we make it a frozen type of activity instead of an activity that's in relationship to all of who we are, which includes our desires for intimacy. So if we stay withdrawn all the time and habitually do that, then we're not really intimate with ourselves, first of all, because we're relating to ourselves only from the frozen, usually historical places We're not relating to ourselves as a living, breathing adult who wants contact and connection and, you know, life with others and wants to feel whole. And we're not in relationship then, from there to other people, and we're not in relationship to life. So we need to know that that's a necessary movement within this stage, but it's not the whole thing. You know, there's the coming forward, there's the sitting back, and there's the, you know, and there's this movement that goes on, and all of it's needed.
Yes, but yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I totally agree. The experience that I have is that the withdrawing will help me to kind of recuperate, or become located.
Absolutely.
Because that's another thing I find myself, you know, when I'm assaulted with the newness of a situation where I have to relate in a different way. I become assaulted with all my background, all my history comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to kind of withdraw and say, okay, hold on. You know, let's reevaluate here or try to stay with what is happening with me inside, because I can also run away from that as a result of having to face too many things coming at once. And wanting to be able to handle them in a way that supports me. But it's also another thing that comes into play, which is another caveat, is the need. It's so complex. It's so complicated. It feels very complex to me. That then something else comes up in me, like the tendency to do everything right,
mm-hmm.
the tendency to want to be perfect,
mm-hmm.
and also the tendency to hide my limitation or imperfection from others as a result of certain things, and wanting to know how to handle that, because some people or some others cannot understand. They're not at that stage at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I find sometimes that I need to protect myself. It's, you know, I'm talking maybe in general terms, but I've had very specific situations happening to me in the past few weeks that have been very scary to me, and I had to handle them, and they were very complicated, or appear to be complicated as far as I was concerned. But the reason why I was getting overwhelmed and anxious is because it was bringing all of this back to me, and realizing so many complexities, like being alone, or how do I relate to this? How do I find support? How do I take care of myself? How do I not blame myself or judge myself? All of this comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Wanting to help myself and show compassion toward myself. How do I find compassion? How can I be open-hearted in this place? All of this comes up.
Mm-hmm. I understand. I really do get this, sweetie. As we go through these next stages, we'll come back to this as well. But the sometimes the hardest thing for us is to be able to locate ourselves, to know where we are, to know that we're frightened, and to let ourselves give ourselves the right nourishment for someone who's frightened, or to give ourselves the right nourishment for someone who in us who is confused and lost in it, or doesn't know what to do. Because there's an enormous amount of pressures. Again, we have to look at the inside and the outside. There are enormous amount of pressures that exist that often come from the outside but also come from the inside in terms of our histories that tell us we're supposed to respond to life in, again, these kind of frozen, habitual ways in which we're supposed to always be on top of things. We're supposed to be perfect. We're supposed to always know what to do with something. We're supposed to always be in charge, or whatever the list is. Everyone has their own list. But the struggle with that is that really the paradox of this stage is that this stage is all about noticing where I actually am, which is not an image. And where I actually am is, if I'm afraid, then what do I need to do for the afraid? If I don't know and I'm confused, then what's the best thing? Usually the best thing for confused and lost is to sit down, not try to push ourselves, to sit down and say, I just need to take this in. I just need to be with me. I just need to feel and let things move through my system. And that's what this stage is all about. This stage is all about being able to pay attention to our own rhythms, our own needs, our own, again, feelings and emotions and what's there, and how we're feeling in relationship to both our inner life and our outer life. And, you know, so it isn't about being compassionate in the sense of maybe I don't know how to be compassionate, you know, what you said. But really it's like, I don't know how to be right now. And if I don't know how to be, then I need to stop and be with me, whatever's there. That in itself is compassionate. The compassion just simply comes, it's not something added to the picture. It comes from noticing where I am, and then being with where I am, and then giving myself the right nutrients for where I am. Even if I don't fully know what the right nutrients are. You know, so the first thing is, like I said, if I'm afraid, it's like, okay, I just need to sit down. I don't know what to do necessarily from there, but maybe as I sit down, something will occur to me. So I sit down and I feel the one in me who's afraid. And then, you know, so what do you do when you comfort someone who's afraid? Maybe I'll rub my arms. Maybe I'll talk to myself a little bit, tell myself, you know, I'm okay. Maybe, you know, different. There are different things we know how to give to ourselves, but they come through stopping and paying attention to and, you know, staying with where we are instead of moving so quickly past it. There's a lot of pressure to move very quickly through things, to get to whatever, again, the next stage. And yet this requires staying with, noticing when I feel free to move and come out, and when I feel the need to withdraw and come back in.
No, you know, I hear very, very clearly what you're saying, and it kind of is giving me a support right now, telling me, okay, you know, trust the intelligence that is building in your life.
Exactly.
And this is what I've been telling myself, and something else too, which I started to do. I'm doing as the best I can in that stage. Is that I have to be patient, and this is why I'm meant by saying withdrawing, patience, not moving too, as you said, too quickly through a situation, which I used to do a lot. So it's like pulling back and staying exactly in a place which is very uncomfortable, but feeling the need to stay there because something will be coming up in me that will answer the questions that I may have or that I think I don't know the answer to. I've seen this happen, and I've seen the support coming, I don't know from somewhere, but support that feels more so coming from within, which is really a strange way to say it, but feeling like there's a power that is really there in my life,
yeah,
or there around me, that is there to support me in my intention to really grow and become more intimate with myself.
That's great, sweetie.
And it's tough. Oh God, it's really tough. This has been a very difficult experience. It has taught me so many things. You know, it's like everything rises together. The hard part rises with the benefit, which we don't see.
Yeah.
I just had to tell you this because I became overwhelmed.
No, I understand. Again, that was you coming into relationship with it, sweetie. That was you paying attention to what was actually needed, which was that you needed to name it, locate it, and you needed to come into relationship around it. That's
right.
Beautiful. You exactly worked out the wisdom and intelligence that's in this stage. So that's beautiful. So thank you. Okay. Anyone else want to share before I go on to the next one?
Hi, Brenda. It's Irma. I am acutely aware of both of these stages at this point because of being in a new relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's, traveling back and forth between the two stages and really trying to working very hard on doing this differently,
mm-hmm.
and not repeating my same old poison ground, mishigas, unhealthy ways of doing relationships in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is like exactly where I am. Can't wait to hear stages 3 and 4. but this is that kind of push-pull, oh my God, can't wait for them to call or text or see or be together, and holy shit, what the hell am I doing?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But this is like perfect timing.
It's great, Irma. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, thank you for doing this. It's like really perfect timing.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone else before I go to the next stage? Again, I'm just highlighting them today, but I'm giving you ways to think about them. It's really impossible in an hour and a half. We should spend a minimum of 3 days working with this territory, but it's important also just be aware of this. I think it's helpful from that point. Okay. So the next gateway of intimacy I'm going to call beauty. The qualities or conditions of this stage are, we enter into this gateway through opening up to the fundamental beauty of life, awakening to the sacredness of life, that includes us and is more than us. This stage includes the first stage of desire and the second stage of individual power and beingness, along with a new level of excitement and energy. It's filled with a new sense of longing to bring forward more wholeness and light and authenticity into relationship, to explore the wiser aspects of our being in relationship. We either have a vision of what it would be like to have this sense of authenticity and realness in relationship, or we have a longing to have this vision. This brings in more of the transpersonal and the impersonal, both as holding and container, and to inform us as we engage together. We awaken this stage to the truth that intimacy itself, relationship itself, is a gateway to wholeness, the fundamental wholeness, happiness, fulfillment, authenticity, being real, being with all of life. Our relationships are imbued with the illuminating power or the call to be fully ourselves. We view all relationships as having a sacred wholeness that are not just about our personal dislikes and likes, our personal histories, but are about something more whole and sacred calling to us within them. The wisdom or intelligence within this stage or gateway is that we're interested in seeking and invoking the sacred and wisest aspects of our own being and others. We're open to being guided and called. We're open more to the unknown. we value our right to exist as a full human being and others' right to exist, even as we wrestle, still ongoing with stage two, in which we're wrestling with individual beingness and desires and the differences. We're also curious and interested, present and attentive to what's here. We realize that within relationship we can birth new visions, new possibilities, new expressions of wholeness. We wrestle with what does it mean to be real here? What does it mean to be fully authentic? We value much more fully the preciousness and beauty of life, and we're listening. Our relationships have the potential to become much more filled with compassion, generosity, and grace. The limitations of this stage or gateway include: we can become stuck in being a certain type of cardboard saint. This is the aspect of us that seeks a certain type of perfection in relationship, or purity, or idealized quality, however you would name it for yourself. As in, we lock in our ideas of what it means to be a spiritual person or a good person or real unauthentic in relationship. The objectification of self now takes on this kind of unconscious, semi-conscious demand that life should be pure or beautiful only. If we were awake enough, good enough, perfect enough, then life would be pure and beautiful and, you know, just right. We have trouble with the fact that we're not idealized images, but living, breathing processes of continually being and coming, and that we all have uneven development. We can become entranced by preconceived ideas of sacred relationship, soulmates, partnering, with very little tolerance for the difficulties. So even though in some ways it's very similar to the first stage of desire, except now it's taken on a, meaning the newness, but now it's taken on not so much a newness as a demand that life and relationship be filled with a kind of light, pure light, perfect light, and that it not have the levels of imperfections, that somehow the imperfections should dissolve in the light. Our ideals and idealizations actually then wind up standing as a barrier for what intimacy at this stage may actually be look like. As I said, it becomes confused with the earlier stage of desire. We can become stuck in a search for meaning, where everything has to mean something. And often at this stage, people can often discard relationships because that relationship isn't holy enough, spiritual enough, soulmate enough, perfect enough, pure enough. You know, that, and that can be a person, it can be a job, it can be any kind of work, but we can throw off things because it's not all that we think it's supposed to be at that, you know, stage. We can idealize what it means to be the real self and use this to further split ourselves, pitting the real self against the confused and lost aspect of ourselves. The unworked territory from the first stage of desire with all its newness and the second stage of individual power plays out here as a type of dominance and certainty that does not allow for all the confusions that are still present within relationship. So the longing for that type of engagement with all of life, with the wholeness of life, can actually become a demand that we be bigger than we are, brighter, shinier, fuller, wiser, kinder, a type of cardboard saint, something more pure than any of us can be. And we do that to our, as I said, to our partners, our jobs, our lives, in which there's this usually semi-conscious but sometimes completely unconscious demand, because we think that's absolutely true. We can believe it so much that we don't see it as a demand at all. We see it as that's how it's supposed to be. So again, as I've named these stages, I'd like you to feel for yourself what came up. Did it, you feel a longing for sacredness and authenticity in relationship? Did it also invoke fears in you? Or a sense that you had to do something more than you could do? Are you aware of idealized images, perfection, purity that you have about how relationships should be, of what it means to be fully yourself? Are you aware of ways you push yourself and others towards these idealizations and are deeply disappointed by yourself and others for not living up to these ideals? It's a great paradox at this stage, because we both know that our relationships can be more, meaning that we don't just have to be caught in pettiness and competition and killing each other off and rejection and smallness and our histories. And so we know that relationship can be more than that. So the paradox is we feel that light, that longing, that call for our relationships to be more, for us to show up for more aliveness, more realness, more wholeness, more connection. And simultaneously, the limitation that kicks in is we beat ourselves up to be there yesterday, and it's filled with purity and perfection instead of more relationship, more engagement, more life, which includes our sorrows, our sufferings, our struggles, our imperfections. So it's a demand. So meeting the demands and the true longing, how to honor the true longing, because that's the intelligence and wisdom within us that knows that relationship, and we can be more real, and simultaneously honor the fact that we have to take steps and stages, and that we're also not images. It's a paradox. So again, I'll open it up and see if anyone would like to share anything.
I think that might have been the stage when I walked out of my marriage. that I was in that place where it had to be what the idealization was, and it wasn't going to be, and I was frozen in what I believed it should be.
Uh-huh.
And just got... At that point, it just, the only thing I could do was walk, get out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I understand, sweetie.
I mean, I don't think I was wiser. This was a long time ago, and I didn't have much of the wisdom that I have now. Probably didn't even know when I was in the second stage. But
right.
But I, looking back, I think that was the attitude that I had in my heart when I said, okay, it's done.
I understand, Florence. That was true for me with my first marriage as well. I think the second stage, I was working it, but I was also skipping a lot in terms of, the individual beingness and power, all that stuff. I was doing a lot of skipping. So
yeah.
I went straight to stage three and was like, okay, it's supposed to be real and whole and all these other things, and it's clearly not going to be, and I'm out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
Yes.
We're fascinating.
Well, it is fascinating.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that, so again, it doesn't mean that we were wrong about this. It's not about right or wrong.
Oh,
it's about
no.
Realizing that that is what was pulling us, that what was calling us was this deeper sense of realness and wholeness, and it was present within us, and it had great intelligence in it. What we couldn't see was the limitation. We couldn't see the limitation being we hadn't dealt with stuff that was in stage two of, difference and self and other, and that we were demanding ourselves to be more than we were. So it had intelligence, enormous intelligence in it. It also had limitations. And at this point, it's just seeing that. You know, it's not right or wrong. Right or wrong is the wrong paradigm for this. It's being able to see the intelligence within it and being able to see the limitation that was within it as well.
Right. Well, I didn't see those things.
I didn't either.
Frozen part took over, you know.
Right.
It had to be this way. It had to be the way I wanted it to be, or the way it should be. It wasn't even...
Well, yes, I understand, sweetie. It was for me as well.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Others in the group relate to this? Anyone else want to share anything? Okay. So let me just name the final stage. The final stage of intimacy, I'm calling union. The qualities or conditions at this stage are we enter this gateway through honesty and transparency and through engaging in the work of all the other gateways of desire, individual power, beingness, and beauty. Intimacy within relationship is not only seen as being about two people or a group of people, but as the third thing called life that unifies all things. It's not all up to us. We're calling out to be whole and intimate, and simultaneously we recognize that all of life is continually calling out to us to come more fully into relationship, to be here and now present. Our imperfections, our difficulties, our wounded places, our vulnerabilities and confusion are all there as part of what it means to be intimate and to be in life. Here we're both willing and committing in an ongoing way to meet life as it is, to engage intimately with everything that appears, which includes our resistances and defenses against engaging intimately. I'll repeat that. Here we are both willing and committing in an ongoing way to meet life as it is, to engage intimately with everything that appears, which includes our resistances and defenses against doing so. Our wisdom and our beauty and our intelligence is not opposed to our lostness and confusion. Being real, being the real self, includes our confusion, our lostness, our imperfection. Life is seen as it is, a continual process of dynamic change. Our true joy comes forward. For joy is no longer in opposition to pain or sorrow. It's the joy of being in life as it is. No place to go, just be more and more here. Intimate union is fundamentally both a surrender and a standing firm. It is a surrender in terms of noticing and being with what is actually occurring in our inner and outer lives, surrendering to the intelligence of what is now occurring, and a standing firm and being willing to be there, to be present, to be here, to show up. Requires both, where we surrender to the intelligence and we stand firm, stay with things as they appear. We align ourselves again and again with all of life. We're willing to do the ongoing work of claiming our beauty and our imperfections, of listening to the other and engaging with the other, treasuring and valuing all of life. This is the stage that I think is what Martin Luther King Jr. said. When I speak of love, I am not speaking of some sentimental and weak response. I am not speaking of that force which is just emotional bosh. I am speaking of that force which all of the great religions have seen as the supreme unifying principle of life. Intimacy is present in the moment, in relationship with myself, what I feel, where I am, my thoughts, my longings, my desires, and with all of life. We wrestle to be here, to stand firm, to surrender. Life with all of its confusions, ambiguities, uncertainties, beauties, preciousness, desires, relationships. This is the stage that includes fundamentally all the other stages that came before, in which we really are actively working to be intimate with each moment, each unfolding, the thought, the feeling, what's here present inside of me and what's around me, the inner and the outer. It is a maturing process, fundamentally, and it's a willingness to let ourselves be matured by life, to be transformed, to be touched by life, for life to touch us and for us to touch life, for us to come into contact and reveal who we are, perfect, precious, imperfect, confused, all the things that we are, and to allow ourselves to stand and be with life. It takes the interesting thing about this stage, and again, we cycle through the stages, but this gateway is present to us in every moment. Every moment that we show up and wrestle, as Yvette was describing, as Florence, you were describing, and Irma, every moment that you show up and you're present, this stage also enters in, this gateway enters in, because you can be held by life, you can be informed by life. Life can teach you, life can carry you, life can reveal something to you, because you're not just defending against life revealing something to you. You're willing to see the places where you're confused and you're projecting onto something, and you're willing to see your limitations, and you're willing to see your resistances to seeing your limitations, and you're willing to be carried, and you're willing to assert who you are and what you are. It's not a stage of light only. It's a stage that is light, that includes darkness, confusion, imperfection, and includes light of wrestling and trying to be oneself. It includes all of those things. That's why I call it union, because it's a union. It's a between your inner and outer life and how you're working for them to be one thing. But it's not a fixed state. It's fundamentally marked by its dynamism, by its continual changing, by us being in the process, by us really recognizing that we are a process. We're not a fixed object. and being willing to wake up to the places where we are objectifying ourselves, others, life as a whole. But that fundamentally nothing is fixed. There's all this dynamic movement and continual change and new life. So again, I'd like you to feel into it for yourself. What comes up for you in this stage? Do you feel a longing for this? Did it invoke incitement and possibility in you? Did it feel impossible? Did it invoke fears and a sense of you couldn't do it? Are you aware of ways you're pushing yourself to be more than you are right now? Can you be kind to the places in you that are impatient, that want things to be easy or simple? Are you willing to be intimate with who you are right now, with all of your wisdom and your heart, your vulnerabilities and your imperfections? Are you aware of places in you that resist this, that want to hold on to rejections and rejudgments of yourself and other? Can you be with who you are right now? The tiny, the little, the small, the vulnerable, the wise, the brave, the courageous. Therefore, giving all of you a chance to return, to come into relationship, to be included in this journey of intimacy, this journey where we return to ourselves and discover that all the things that we have sought is right here and now. That we discover that we are the ones we have been seeking, that this life is the life we've been seeking. It's not something separate and apart. It's all included in who we are right now. So I'll open it up. Star 6, if anyone would like to share.
Brenda, can you just speak a little bit more to the limitations in this stage, other than the questions you just posed?
The limitations that appear in this stage are really overlays from the other three stages.
Mm-hmm.
They're overlays meaning that we're still hanging on to idealized images of who we're supposed to be, perfection and purity. We're still holding on to ideas that we can be intimate without being vulnerable. We can be intimate. It's true.
Yeah.
We do.
No,
we
I know.
That we can be intimate without being vulnerable, that we can be intimate without revealing ourselves, that we can be intimate without claiming our mistakes and our confusions and our distortions, that we can be intimate without acknowledging that we don't have a clue how to be intimate. So the limitations are the things that have all been these overlays. You know, what this final stage is about, and again, we weave through all of these, this is a gateway that's also available in every moment. Every moment that you accept something about your imperfection, that you're here in this place of union. Every moment that that you give yourself the right nutrient that you need, this gateway opens up. Every moment that you sit down because you don't know what to do and you inquire into, with kindness, into yourself as to what's actually going on, you enter this gateway. It's the gateway in which all of life is supporting you in being whole and intimate. And we enter into it each moment that we actually pay attention to what's really going on. And we leave it, if you will, we run away from it, each moment that we don't do that, each moment that we judge and cut off and kill off ourselves and we freeze and fix and we do it, we run away from it. And yet, if we can wake up in the middle of that judgment and see that that's what we're doing and halt in the middle of where we're, you know, starting to cut ourselves off and kill ourselves off, and we can pause in that moment, this gateway opens up to us. So this gateway is available in each and every moment that we can bear to be present with what's actually occurring inside of ourselves. Each moment we can bear to be honest about imperfection, judgments, lostness, beauty, wisdom. Each moment that we're honest, this gateway opens up. Life carries us, and we're not just pushing and efforting by ourselves.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Jerry.
Uh-huh.
I'm feeling like to do this, it's as though the foundation of my life is crumbling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to go about shoring it up while I get this, my house, my life, my house, while I am getting this new foundation going. So I'm kind of struggling, not kind of, but really struggling. And I sit for long periods of time when I have many things that I would like to do, but I just it seems like I need to sit.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a real hard, it's real hard for me to make the transition. I'll just mm-hmm. leave it at that.
Well, Jerry, what you've just said is beautiful, meaning that you sit. Sometimes sitting is exactly the right thing for us to do because you don't know what to do. You're describing that the old way, if you will, of being doesn't, you can feel it crumbling. And you, but at the same time, the new, you can feel it kind of whispering around you, but it hasn't quite, you know, tipped in. And so you're sitting. That sitting, you need to see that sitting as a place of both allowing things to shift and move as they need to shift and move, and as they need to begin to inform you. So in this sitting, I would be in this place of receptivity. I would see this as a place of receiving, that my only job in this sitting is to receive where I am, who I am right now, my fears about things dissolving, my challenges, but that's all I'm going to do. I'm not going to fix it. I'm not going to try to make it better. I'm not going to do anything with it. I'm just going to receive that there are these aspects of myself that have held on to life in a certain kind of way, are softening, dissolving, changing, and that there is simultaneously there is something new that is trying to come in and reveal itself to me, and I have to sit here and receive that. I have to be in this place of true transformation where something is dying and something is being born at the same time. And I just have to receive myself here, and I have to receive life here. I have to sit down and do that. That's beautiful, Jerry. That's pure intelligence on your part. Great wisdom on your part that you're giving yourself the space to sit.
Thank you. That was so good to hear.
You're welcome. Thank you. Anyone else?
Brenda. I just, you know, just listening to Jerry was really amazing, too, for me, because sitting and receiving is so different than being stuck.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then again, I can view being stuck as an escape from sitting and receiving.
Yes, that's true.
A very difficult one to evaluate, because it can be this line between the two.
I'll tell you that what I can feel is the difference between the two, if that will be helpful to you.
Mm-hmm.
Stuckness for me is true stuckness is we're not awake to it at all. We don't even really know that we're stuck. Even if we say we're stuck, we don't have any awareness of the qualities within the stuck. If we're awake to any of the qualities within the stuck, like our fear or our uncertainties or our angers, or if we're awake to anything that's in that space, then we're actually in the receiving that I was describing with Jerry. If we're not awake to anything in it, if it just is completely veiled and hardened like a wall, or maybe a fog wall, then that's stuck. But if you're aware to any of the qualities, then you can receive, and then you just work with receiving more of the qualities that are there. Then you're not stuck.
Yeah, I hear you, and it's a very difficult process. Because a lot of fear comes up.
Mm-hmm. I understand. But letting yourself know the fear, sweetie, means that you're not stuck.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of, again, like Jerry, it's kind of refreshing for me to hear it this way, because I haven't been really stuck. I may have had some of that, but there was a process in me that felt that I was not ready, but I was knowing that something I have to do. I have to do something, and it's pretty much the same way, probably, as Jerry is describing, and my foundation is also become crumbling slowly, and I have to do something about it. And I know this isn't really the time now, because physically
right.
I can't.
But that's not stuck. That's a pause. That's an appropriate pause in which you recognize that as something is crumbling, there's nothing you can do about it. At some point, something new will appear to do. But at that particular moment, there is nothing to do.
Wow, that's great. Now, this is really revealing to me.
So these two wise women in the room who are very wise, you just didn't know that you were wise. All I'm doing is pointing out that you're wise.
Great, thank you. Now, this is very uplifting. I feel like a weight has been removed from my shoulder.
Good.
And the way it on myself, by the way, this is a self-limitation.
Sure, absolutely.
And I'm realizing that, and as the consequences of being very hard on myself, and the knowing about this is also very, very uplifting in many different ways. It's an opening of about saying the truth, talking about the truth, being honest.
Fantastic, sweetie. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Wonderful. Anyone else want to share?
It seemed to me, this is Florence, about it being in the last stage to me, that my analogy or the image that came to me. I'm not a water person. But I imagined it feels like being on an air raft in slightly choppy water, where you have control to kind of put your hands in the water and move yourself along, and you're also in danger and also in a place which is gently rocking you. It's all of that in the image that in Jason's book about a briatic place, mm-hmm. where it's not focused in on me, and it's not focused in on the ocean or the raft. It's all one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well said, Florence. I actually like the image. I would say to you that the waters, though, aren't always choppy.
Sometimes yeah.
So I just want to add that slight difference, nuance.
Good
sometimes
reminder.
The waters are choppy, and you're feeling how you're being carried within it. Sometimes you're putting your hand in the water and you're helping yourself to paddle. Sometimes you're drifting and the sun's out and you're being carried. Sometimes it's rain. It's a lot of different things. It's all those
yeah.
things. But it's all held in relationship. That's the key to it. And it's all allowed to exist. And so you can find yourself more predominantly in the stage of wrestling with your independence and individuation and all these kinds of things. But if you're really there, as I said, this gateway also enters in. If you're really awake and let yourself know what's going on in the place of stuck, then this gateway enters in. So all of these gateways are present at all times of life, even as we move through stages, and some may be more, one may be more in the foreground and one more in the background. But if we can begin to allow ourselves to realize that relationship isn't just something we make up or create, or intimacy isn't just something we make up or make happen, but it's something that is actually built into life, then as you said, it's the whole thing. You feel that. You feel the raft. You feel the water. You feel the dolphins. You feel the seaweed in the ocean, the islands that are around. All of it is included within the picture.
Yeah.
And it changes how we move. When we think it's all up to us, which is what can happen in, stage two, where we're like all the pushing our independence and all that kind of stuff, then we wind up seeing everything as an opposition, and actually, because we have to keep pushing against stuff to get what we want, to get where we want. In this stage, we realize that really nothing's in opposition, including opposition appearing,
mm-hmm.
including resistance appearing. It's all held. So, as Martin Luther King Jr. said, it's all held. It's the love as the great unifying principle of all life.
So. This has been great. Thank you so much, Brenda.
You're welcome.
Really a wonderful lecture.
You're wonderful. Thank you. Anyone else want to share who hasn't had a chance to share today? Or someone who's had a chance to share, but is there anyone, anything anyone else wants to share before we hang up?
This has been great, Brenda. Thank you so much.
You're welcome so much. All right, darlings. Good to be here with everyone, and thank you.
Thank you very much, Brenda.
Thank you, sweetie.
Yes, thank you. It was wonderful.
Everybody.
Oh, yeah.
All right, darling.
Great.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.